Okay, good afternoon. Okay, administrative announcements. Midterm one is a week later than scheduled originally. You know that already. Not midterm one, midterm three. On midterm three, there is a group question. It comes first. So figure out how you're going to meet your group at the beginning of the hours, of the two-hour stretch. There's also question zero, your name, your login, your TA's name, and your discussion section number. And so you should know all those things by now. The other administrative announcement is, because next Wednesday is a holiday, the first lecture of next week will actually be held this Friday. So today and Wednesday, we're talking about this week's topic, which is what this week's lab and this week's homework are about. On Friday, we're starting a new topic that you're not actually going to do anything with until next week's lab and homework. If your lab or discussion section falls on a holiday next week, you might think about trying to crash another section, like, you know, the one at 8 in the morning or something on Tuesday. Okay, this week's topic is streams. Streams are another implementation of the idea of sequences. So far, we've seen two ways to implement sequences, namely lists and vectors. Streams are a third way that are mostly like lists, but with some additional bells and whistles thrown in that we'll see today and Wednesday. And here's the big picture. What streams give us is more efficiency for certain kinds of computation, the possibility of infinite data sets, which is really cool, and a functional representation of time-varying data, which is the reason that streams are in this chapter instead of chapter 2. Because chapter 3, which introduces object-oriented programming, does so partly because when you're modeling something that changes over time, like, say, the balance in your bank account, the most natural way to do that is to have a state variable in your program that changes over time, so that the passage of time in the computer models the passage of time in the real-world situation that you're trying to represent. But as we've seen, especially last week when we talked about concurrency problems, there are disadvantages to using state variables. You have to start worrying about one part of the program stepping on the toes of another part of the program. Functional programming doesn't have that problem, and so it's of some interest to have a way to represent things that change over time, but using functional programming techniques. And we'll see that streams give us a way to do that. Okay. Okay, so here's the definition of a prime number. A prime is an integer greater than or equal to 2 that has no factors in between 2 and n minus 1 inclusive. So its only factors are 1 and itself. Okay, so I want to write a predicate prime question mark to test whether an integer greater than or equal to 2 is a prime. And the most straightforward way to do that is to start by generating explicitly this range of numbers from 2 to n minus 1. So just to show you, range is a little helper procedure. It's quite straightforward. You say range 5, 9, for example, and you get the integers from 5 to 9 inclusive. Okay? So up here, we construct the range of numbers from 2 to n minus 1. And that's a list of numbers. And now we filter that list using as the predicate, is n divisible by this number? Is the remainder on dividing n by this number equal to x? Okay? So that's a complicated way of saying, is this number, I'm sorry, is n divisible by this number? So that's what it means to be a factor of n. That's the definition of factor. And then finally, we say, okay, is that list empty? If so, then there are no factors in this range, and therefore n is a prime number. Okay, so does it work? Well, 6 isn't prime. 7 is prime. Seems to work. The trouble with this representation of the prime, well, first of all, the advantage of this representation, if you look at prime question mark, and if you understand what the pieces are that's used in it, it says very, very directly this definition. So you read prime question mark, and it's perfectly clear, I claim, that what it's doing is seeing whether n is a prime number. Okay? So it's very, very self-documenting. The disadvantage that it has is that it's not very efficient in certain situations. For example, I want to know whether 100,000 is prime. So you human beings, you tell me, is 100,000 prime? No. How do you know? It's divisible by 2. This program is constructing in the computer's memory a list of 99,998 numbers, namely the ones from 2 to 99,999. And then it's going through all of those to select the ones that are factors of 100,000. And there's lots of those. Well, you know, everything that has 2s and 5s and 10s in it. Yeah, right. And then it says, is that list empty? Well, it didn't even get through the first step. That seg fault is because it ran out of memory trying to construct a list of length 99,998. And therefore, it seems like this isn't a good way to tell whether a number is prime. And so instead, we tend to do, whoops, no, that's not what I wanted. That's what I want. Instead, we tend to do it this way. And this one is 6 prime, yes. Is 7 prime, I'm sorry, 6 prime, no. I've been awake too long. 7 prime, yes. Is 100,000 prime? No, right away. Now, it still isn't completely magical. If I say, is 100,001 prime? Oh, no, look at that. It's divisible by something easy. So this isn't divisible by any small numbers, so it's probably going to turn out to be prime. But again, we're going to have the same problem of generating huge long, well, no, we're not. We're not going to have that problem. So it's not going to seg fault, but it is going to take a long time before it finally tells us that this number is true. So if the number is a large prime, there's no magic that lets us find that out quickly. Although, if you read the book, you'll see that there are ways we can find out probabilistically. We can find out that n is probably prime quickly. But we can't find out for sure except by trying all the factors. So this program is slow for problems that are inherently slow, but it's fast for numbers that have some small factor. And the way it works is iteratively. So right here we call iter of 2. Iter's argument is a potential factor of n. And it looks a little bit like a filter in that it's a three-way con clause. First comes the base case. If factor is equal to n, that means we made it all the way from 2 to n minus 1 without finding any factors. Therefore, n is prime, and we should return true. So this is the base case. And yes, we could stop at the square root of n, that would work also, but I'm trying to avoid that complication in putting up simple-looking code. So the second con clause says, is the argument called factor, in fact, a factor of n? And if so, we should return false. N is not prime if we find a single factor. So that's what makes this fast. We start out, for the case of 100,000, we start with factor equals 2. We ask the question, is 2 a factor of 100,000? Yes, it is. So we return false right away. We never look at 3, the same way you human beings did it. And finally, if factor is smaller than n and not a factor of n, then we have to try factor plus 1 and see whether that's a factor of n. So that's the recursive case here. Questions about how this procedure works? Good, simple. Okay. So this one has the virtue of efficiency, and it has the virtue of not blowing up on large numbers because it takes constant space instead of theta of n space. Its disadvantage is, I claim, looking at this, it's a lot harder. You know, if it were called mystery instead of prime, and on an exam we said, what does this function compute? It would take you a little longer to figure out what this function actually computes, because the definition up here is not so explicit in the code. We're not really saying what we mean. Instead, we have to talk about an algorithm for stepping through potential factors, because that formal parameter factor of the helper procedure is really misnamed. We don't know whether it's a factor or not. It should be called potential factor, and then it would be a little clearer, but that's quite a lot of typing. So mostly, out in the real world, people write programs like this. And it's okay, and they work, you know, that's fine, but they're not so self-documenting. And this is, I think, why your high school programming teacher told you to put a lot of comments in your code. Because the way you were taught to express algorithms back in high school does not lend itself to actually reading the code with understanding. So you have to put in all those comments to say what you're doing and do things in pseudocode and all of that. Whereas this version, I claim if this were called mystery and we put it on an exam saying, what does this do? You wouldn't have any trouble answering the question. Right? Unless you forgot from high school what a prime number is. You would say, well, okay, this says make the range from 2 to n minus 1 and use filter to collect the ones that n is divisible by. And if that's empty, oh, yeah, that's the definition of a prime number. Okay? So we have a trade-off between expressiveness and efficiency. And what streams are going to do is give us a way of having the expressiveness of the make a list, you know, with the explicit range version without actually having the inefficiency of it. So if we go to line 2 here. Now I have stream prime 6, stream prime 7, stream prime 100,000, instantly false. And yet, the form of this program, if you look here, can we see, by the way, today? Oh, yeah. Thank you, control booth. That's awesome. The form of the program is exactly like the first version that I showed you, except the word stream is thrown in here and there. Okay? So a stream program looks just like a list program. That's the first thing. And it works the same in the sense that you get the same answer that you would with a list program, but it's more efficient. So how is that possible? This program looks as if it starts by computing the range of numbers from 2 to n minus 1. Before we even get to stream filter or stream null, we're doing this stream range thing. And so how is it possible that for 100,000 we get an answer instantly? And the answer is, if we look at stream range from 2 to 99999, oops, we get an answer right away. And the answer is a pair whose car is 2, so looking just like what regular old range would do. But its cutter is something new called a promise. So let me take a short range, like 3 to 5. So in lists, this would be 3, 4, 5. But in streams, it's a pair whose car is 2, and whose cutter is a promise, whatever that looks like, to compute the range, not 2, 3, to compute the range from 4 to 5 later. It's like, I'll gladly pay you tomorrow for a hamburger today. Because we're making a promise, we can get this answer back very quickly. We really only had to compute the 3 and not the rest of it. And it doesn't take much space in memory either, because we haven't cashed in this promise yet. Now, how does this help us with prime numbers? It helps because if I want to know if 100,000 is prime, my first step is to construct the range from 2 to 99999. And that's the thing that was both time and space consuming in the first version of the program. But now, we very quickly get back the answer. Which is 2 and a promise to compute the rest of it later. Okay, the next step is to filter this. To say, let's select only the things that are factors of 100,000. So, factors of 100,000. Well, is 2 a factor of 100,000? Yes. So stream filter right away is going to return a pair whose car is 2. And actually, let me in 2 to 99999. So we're going to make a promise to do the factors of 100,000 in 3 to 99999. So this is the stream that stream filter returns. Is it null? No. It has a 2 in it. For all we know, 2 is the only factor of 100,000. But it doesn't matter. As soon as we find one factor, we know that 100,000 is not prime. So in fact, we never cash in this promise. And that's where the efficiency comes from. Just knowing that there's one factor is good enough. Okay? Yes. Yeah, the question is, if instead of looking for factors, we were looking for a number equal to 99,999, then yes, it would generate the whole range and finally discover the last one. The same as if we were asking the question, is 100,003 prime? Right? To which the answer is yes, it is. So we have to try every possible factor to find that out. So again, it doesn't do magic, but often what it does do is good enough. Yes? Sorry? Is this less time efficient than the iterative version? Probably a little bit by a constant factor, not a lot. You'll see when we talk about how this is implemented that it really is not a very difficult undertaking to do this. Yeah? This pair is passed on to stream null that includes the two. No, so that's a good question. So what if we want to know whether 9 is prime? Okay. So I'm going to start by generating 2 through 8. Right? Factors of 9 and 2 through 8. Okay. Stream filter. Is the code up there for stream filter? Let me. I think I do have it. Oops. Okay, here's stream filter. It says, okay, take this stream. Is, first of all, is this the empty stream? No, it's not. It's got at least a 2 in it. Then it says, is 2 a factor of 9? No, it's not. So we do a recursive call to stream filter on the stream cutter of this. Now, when we ask for the stream cutter of a stream, it's not just the cutter. It's take the cutter and cash it in. So my first step is to cash in the 3 through 8 promise. But, and here's where a lot of students get mixed up, that doesn't mean cash it sort of all the way in, because we're still in this world of streams, so we get back 3 and a promise to compute 4 through 8 later. And we take this thing and use it as an argument to the recursive call to stream filter. Okay? So we've chopped off the car, the stream car of the original range, because it isn't a factor. We took the stream cutter, which cashed in this promise. Here's the cashing in. Now I'm going to call stream filter on this. So now we compute factors of 9 in 3 through 8. Is 3 a factor of 9? Yes. So we get 3 and a promise to compute later on the factors of 9 in 4 through 8. This pair is what stream filter returns. Okay? So is that null? No, it isn't. So 9 is not prime, and we never cash in this promise. Right? So we keep on cashing in promises until either we find a factor, and then we return a stream that has that factor as its car, or we run out of candidates, and we're looking at the empty stream, just like the empty list. in which case we return true. Okay? So as soon as we find a factor, we can stop. If we never do find a factor, then we have to keep trying all the way to the end. So if you compare that to the iterative version, you'll see that it basically has the same time behavior. The time that it takes is theta of the first factor of n. Because that's how many steps through the iteration, and that's how many recursive calls to stream filter before we actually make a promise. Okay? Yes? Okay, there's a good question. Question is, if this is more efficient in time, why would anyone use regular lists instead of streams? And the answer is, as we'll see later on, stream programs are more sensitive to the order in which things happen than list programs are. So streams do not play well with mutation. So in purely functional languages, if you learn ML or Haskell or something, which I'm guessing you've done from the form of your question, then yes, all lists are lazy lists because everything you do in those languages is functional. Scheme is a kind of compromise language which supports functional programming but also supports non-functional programming with mutation. Because of that, it can't only have lazy lists. Okay? Okay. So how does this actually work? If you look at stream range here, it looks just like range. Takes two arguments, beginning and ending numbers. It says if the beginning number is greater than the ending number, the list version says the empty list, this version says the empty stream. Otherwise, the list version says cons, this version says con stream from onto recursive call plus from 1 to 2. Well, what stops this from generating all the numbers in the range? Why is there a promise going on? And the answer is constream. Constream turns out to be a special form. Because if constream were an ordinary procedure, then there wouldn't be any time efficiency. It actually would generate the whole range. It would just be using different names for the same functions. So what the way it works is this. Constream, which, by the way, is not actually a scheme primitive. It's something we provide for you. Constream takes two arguments, and it abbreviates the following. Cons A, delay B. Delay means make a promise to compute this expression. And B here can be any complicated expression you want, not just a variable or anything. This is a parameter, not an actual argument expression. So delay expression is a special form, and this one really is built into Scheme. It's in the Scheme standard. It says, make a promise to compute B. Well, what's this promise business? It turns out that as of the most recent Scheme standards, promises are required to be a separate data type, distinguishable from everything else. But they don't have to be. It's very easy to implement promises in terms of things we know already, because you can just take delay, some expression, and translate that into lambda of no arguments expression. So we use the expression as the body of a lambda. We need the lambda is actually serving two purposes here. The obvious purpose is that when you define a procedure, its body is not evaluated yet. Right? The body is not evaluated until you call the procedure. We keep talking about this in different contexts, how if you say define square x to be times xx, it doesn't multiply anything. Later, when you say square of 5, that's when some multiplication happens. So making something the body of a procedure delays it, which is what we want. But lambda serves another purpose too, which we now know about having learned the environment model of evaluation, which is we don't only remember that expression, we remember the environment in which that lambda was seen. And that's important because the expression can have free variables in it, can have variables that are not parameters of that lambda. In fact, since this lambda has no arguments, any variable in the body is a free variable, right, with respect to this lambda, as opposed to a bound variable, which is one that's a formal parameter of this lambda. So in order for the free variables to get the values that we intend, we have to have access to the environment in which this promise was made. If that sounds very abstract, which it probably does, I see some people nodding off. If your neighbor's falling asleep, jostle him in the elbow. Problem is I have two neighbors asleep down here, so might not work. Take this example. Here's a const stream. So it's going to make a promise to compute stream range plus from 1, 2. Now, all along in showing you these examples, I've been a little hand-wavy about this. I said, OK, we're trying to compute the range from 2 to 99999. So we make a promise to do 3 to 99999. Where'd that 3 come from? Well, there isn't actually a 3 in the promise per se. The promise is a procedure. No parameters. And the body is stream range of plus from 1, 2. That's the body of the procedure. Well, how do I know what from and to mean? Because I'm not cashing this promise in until later. By the time I cash it in, maybe from and to have some other values in some other part of the program. And the answer is the right bubble of this promise points to a frame in which from is 3 and 2 is 99999. I'm sorry, from is 2. Thank you. So plus from 1 is 3. Okay? Yes. Can you delay a self-evaluating expression? Sure. That's an instance of the question I said back in the first day is going to come up over and over again, which is, can I put in the context of And remember I said the answer to those questions is always yes. Okay? So all you're doing, if you say delay 5, you're just saying lambda of no arguments, 5. Well, that's a procedure which, when invoked, will return 5. OK? Yeah. It's called streams because the book calls it streams. You mean what data type does Scheme think it is? Scheme thinks it's a pair. So with ordinary lists, if you look at a pair whose cutter is another pair, well, you know for sure that you're looking at a pair. And maybe this pair is a list. And to find out, you cutter your way down to the end, and you either find the empty list, in which case, yes, it was a list, or you find something else, in which case, no, it wasn't a list, right? Yeah, so just as with lists, the underlying representation involves pairs. So if you say pair question mark of a stream, the answer is true. You could also say stream question mark of a stream, and that'll be true too, because it just says and pair x, pair question mark x, promise question mark cuter x. Okay? So a pair whose cuter is a promise is a stream. Actually, technically, I suppose it has to be the case that eventually, if you keep cashing in promises, you get to the empty stream. But yeah, yes. What's the empty stream look like? Turns out not to matter. You could use anything at all as long as stream null question mark uses EQ for the testing. But we use the empty list. So the empty list and the empty stream are the same in our representation. Okay. Yes. Wouldn't prime question mark, you mean? Yeah, stream prime question mark. Yeah, right. Of 100,000. Yes, it would run out of memory. So that's a disadvantage compared to the 2 version. But with a little care in the programming, we could actually fix that by not keeping a pointer to the head of the stream. Okay. Yeah. Why does Scheme implement delay and not constream? The design philosophy of Scheme is to give you as little as possible, to have a really small language with very powerful building blocks that you can use to build whatever you want. Or, as it says in the first paragraph of the Scheme manual that's in your course reader, languages should be designed not by piling feature on top of feature, but by removing the restrictions that make additional features appear necessary. So they give you delay. They give you macros, which are the ability to make your own special forms that get transformed from one notation to another. So the ability to say that this means this. And then you can make your own streams. So for example, some people like to do a slightly different kind of lazy list in which constream would be cons delay A, delay B. That has the advantage that your streams can then get very deep as well as very long. We chose not to do it that way because it was simpler, less confusing. And we had that choice because it's not a Scheme primitive, because it's something that Scheme lets us build for ourselves. Okay? Moving on. These are good questions. I'm happy to get questions like this. I haven't quite finished telling you about the implementation. I told you how constream works. Now I have to tell you about streamcar and streamcuter. They're ordinary procedures. Streamcar is just car. That's easy. Streamcuter of S to be force cuter S. So streamcuter is defined in terms of a Scheme primitive procedure, force, whose domain is promises. And what it does is cash in the promise and return the value that the promise has. Okay? So force is the opposite of delay. But unlike delay, it's not a special form. It's an ordinary procedure. In fact, it's very simple. To force a promise P, just invoke it with no arguments. Because all a promise is a procedure of no arguments. Okay? So that's these two procedures that we wrote, and this one that's built into Scheme, but we're rewriting to show you how it works, along with the change of constream into delay and the change of delay into lambda. And again, this we wrote, and this we also wrote, I'm also writing on the board to show you how it could be implemented, although it's actually implemented by Scheme itself. Okay? So now we have streams. That's the entire mechanism. It's a pretty remarkable thing that with hardly any code, we can invent this new way of doing sequences, which has the property of reordering the sequence of events in the program. So if you look at stream prime up at the top of the screen there, there's a certain sequence of events implied by the form of this program. Namely, start by making all the numbers from 2 to n minus 1. Use filter to select the ones that are factors of n. And then ask the question, did we catch any? Okay? But that isn't the sequence of events. The actual sequence of events is generate 2. See if 2 is a factor of n. No. Generate 3. See if 3 is a factor of n. No. Et cetera. Generate 7. See if 7 is a factor of n. Yes. Return false. Okay? So the sequence of events is very different from what it looks like here. And that's because of the delaying effect of constream. Yes? Stream null is actually just the same as null because we represent the empty stream as the empty list. But we could use anything. We could use some word like empty stream, in which case stream null would just be EQ stream empty stream. Quote, empty stream, whatever. Okay, it doesn't really matter. That's the easy part. Yeah. If stream null is null, it doesn't matter what the empty stream looks like. Because if we're looking for factors of 100,000 and the char of our stream is 2, stream filter is going to say constream that 2 onto something or other. And because it's constream, it doesn't matter what the something or other is. We're never going to cash it in. Okay? So the only time we have to go all the way down to the end is if we give it a large prime as its argument, which is the same as the time behavior of the iterative version, the second one that I showed you. If you give that a large prime, it has to go all the way down to the end. All right, footnote to the above. It talks about this in the book. Finding out whether a number is prime or not is a question that used to be of interest only to mathematicians, but now it is tremendously, tremendously important because that's how the codes that are used on the internet work. So when you type your credit card number into Amazon or something, and you are trusting that some third party that's intercepting your communication with Amazon can't find out your credit card number because it's encrypted and only Amazon can decrypt it, the technique that's used to make that work involves checking the primality of very large numbers. Very large numbers. So the techniques that are actually used in practice for checking primality are not like this. The mathematics is trickier, the running time is shorter, and as I say, they talk about it in the book a little bit, and they have footnotes that refer you to, you know, even lengthier explanations if you're interested. I'm using this as an example not because this is the way you'd really solve this particular problem, but because it's a simple problem for which we can write simple code that makes the point. Okay? All right. By the way, when I say that delay is equivalent to lambda of no arguments expression, I have my fingers crossed a little bit. You'll see later on, either later, no, not later today. You'll see on Wednesday that The real implementation of delay is slightly more complicated than this for efficiency reasons. Okay. Infinite streams. Where's my chalk? Where did I put my chalk? Here, chalk, chalk, chalk. Here. Ah, there you go. Thank you. Okay. Let me just quickly say, define range from 2 if greater than from 2 empty list, otherwise cons from onto range plus from 1, 2. Okay? This is the list version of range. What I've done so far is to make a teeny little change in the form of this program. That's it. I also changed the name to stream range. But never mind that. This is the only significant change that I made. This teeny little change had a huge, huge influence on the way the program actually behaves. It gives me this completely non-intuitive reordering of the sequence of events in the program. Okay? Now I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to make a very dramatic change in the form of the program that's going to have very little effect on the way it runs. And here's the dramatic change. I'm turning this into a recursion with no base case. And by the way, since there's no base case, which is the only thing that I use the variable 2 for, I really don't need this variable 2 any longer in my program. I can just say, define ints from, oops, no, yeah, ints from constream from ints from plus from 1. This looks like a disaster, right? It's a recursion with no base case. It's got to be an infinite loop. But it isn't. If I say ints from 2, I get a pair whose car is 2 and whose cutter is a promise to do ints from 3. It worked. How about if I say stream car of stream cutter of ints from 2. In other words, give me the second element. I get 3. Okay? I can do this forever. I can say, in fact, show stream ints from 2. Show stream is a little helper procedure. If you call it with one argument, if the stream is fewer than 10 elements, it gives you all of them. If not, it stops at 10 elements. You can also say show stream. You can abbreviate SS, by the way. Ints from 2. And now I can ask for the first 30 elements. And I get that. Okay? So inside my little teeny box here are all the positive integers. That's the second thing I promised you, infinite data sets. And we can do things like show stream, stream map, lambda x times x2, ints from 1, oops, not enough close parens, and get all the even integers. Okay. I'm going to run over a minute. Too bad. The sieve of Eratosthenes for finding prime numbers. Eratosthenes was a Greek guy, you know, 2,500 years ago. He said, write down all the integers. And I'm going to stop here because we're out of time. And then you do the following thing. Circle the first number that is unused. Cross out all the multiples of that number. Iterate. Circle the first number that's unused. Cross out all the multiples of this number. Now, some of them are already crossed out, but so what? Don't worry about it. Circle the first number. 10's already crossed out. 15's already crossed out. 20's already crossed out. 25 is the first one that isn't, and so on. Okay, it turns out all the ones that are left are prime at this point on the board. Well, here's a program that does that. It says, circle the first number. Filter out all the multiples of that number from stream coulder of stream and sieve the result. Whoops. Load. Sieve. What? Oh, sorry. Define integers. It's from one. Show stream primes 20. And there they are inside my computer's the prime numbers. Okay, so that's a significant computation done on an infinite data set. See you Wednesday.